So the National Center for Ontological Research was established officially a week ago. It's been building for more than a year now. And if anybody is interested, I have some flyers here. We have two principal academic sites, which are Stanford and Buffalo. And then we have various partners, including the Lockheed Corporation and the National Institute of Standards and Technology and something like 20 other government and business and academic organizations, all of whom are concerned to try and raise the scientific standards of ontology in areas like biomedical informatics. Now, I'm a philosopher, as was already said, and philosophers are interested in things like logic, and also they're interested in things like texts. They like to read texts, and I have been reading the documentation of the HL7 RIM as if it were a philosophical text. Now, the results are, for me, very strange. So it seems to me that the HL7 RIM is strange. And I am now going to express my confusion and consternation about various aspects of the HL7 RIM in the hope that you can help me. So the HL7 RIM, or HL7 Reference Information Model, is a standard for exchange of information between clinical information systems. I am a great believer in standards, and I think that the standards building efforts represented by the HL7 RIM are absolutely necessary and wonderful, and the effort is, from that point of view, to be welcomed wholeheartedly. And it's an ambitious attempt. So the HL7 RIM reflects an attempt to capture the whole of the healthcare information domain in one go, which is also, I think, a laudable, ambitious goal. But there are some reasons for skepticism. I think that the documentation of the HL7 RIM is poor. It's full of misprints, for instance, and misprints which may be deliberate, in the sense that some of the formulations may be deliberately non-natural, so that what look like misprints are, in fact, strange, almost English. There are logical and ontological problems, which is what I'm mainly going to be talking about today, and the way in which definitions are treated is, it seems to me, problematic. Another reason for skepticism is that the goals which are associated with the HL7 RIM. HL7, as you all know, is a messaging standard. But now it's been associated with much more ambitious goals, including the goal of serving as a basis for an entire clinical record architecture. Now, I think that this is a very strange goal to have for a messaging standard. And I worry that it might be similar to having the goal of using an air traffic control messaging system as a basis for a science of thermodynamics. There's some mismatch here. Or anyway, there's a danger that there is some mismatch here. So let's look at some samples from this documentation. We have the following definition of living subject. A living subject is a subtype of entity representing an organism or complex animal. I think there's a problem with the or here. Alive or not. That is a strange definition. And it's not clear to me that this definition is going to be a good basis for using HL7 RIM for the purposes of, for instance, coding genomics experiments. Another one, person. A living subject representing single human being who is uniquely identifiable through one or more legal documents. Now, if you look at the HL7 related websites, you will see that HL7 has launched a task force to aid Katrina evacuees who don't have documents. Now, according to the HL7 RIM definition of person, people without documents are not people. Or anyway, they do not satisfy the definition of person as formulated by HL7 RIM. Yes?
Did that website imply that there weren't documents in existence that could identify these people?
Many of the most problematic cases in New Orleans are people without any documents. And I'm sure that this effort is not an effort directed only at those people who have some documents. Of course, the problem is not as bad as it seems, as we will see in a minute. But let's take the problem in its worst case form. So if we really did define person as a person without, as a person with documents, then this would be problematic in a number of ways. First of all, that kind of definition is useless, because unless you already understand what a person is, you can't understand what a person is. Secondly, it's viciously, infinitely regressive, because in order to understand what a person with documents is, you already have to understand what a person is, but then you have to go back to understanding what a person with documents is. But also, obviously, it has the effect of making it impossible to refer to persons without documents. Now, in order to see why the problem is not as bad as it seems, we need to think about what the RIM is. So, what is it about? And I said earlier, it's a messaging standard. It's a standard determining the kinds of information that we find in the world of healthcare. Now, we can distinguish between a blood pressure measurement, which we can say is an information item. Even that is not quite right, but this will do to start off with. And then we have blood pressure, which is what blood pressure measurement measures. There was blood pressure for many millions of years before there was blood pressure measurement. So now the question is the RIM about blood pressure measurement, or about the information which derives from blood pressure measurement, or is the RIM about blood pressure? And the answer which is given by the RIM is, there is no difference between these two things. And again, this is a source of puzzlement for people like me who read documents as a philosopher. The RIM says, the truth about the real world is constructed through a combination and arbitration of attributed statements. As such, there is no distinction between an activity and its documentation. Now, I think that there is a distinction between an activity and its documentation. And I think there is a distinction between blood pressure and blood pressure measurement. But the RIM does not recognize that distinction. Now, unfortunately, other people do. And other people often have to read the RIM documentation. And I think that some of the people who wrote the RIM documentation also do recognize a distinction between an activity and its documentation. And what this means is that within the RIM documentation, you find two layers. You find the layer of those people who are concerned with information, and you find the layer of those people who are concerned with reality. And these are like two hearts beating within a single breast. And many of the strange features of the documentation derive, I think, from the fact that there are these two hearts beating to some degree in competition with each other. So two incompatible conceptions of the RIM. First of all, we have the strictly information model conception of the RIM, which I take it is the correct official conception. This is the conception that we should try and be loyal to. And this is what the official descriptions of the RIM at the beginning of the documents describe it as. It's a static model of health and healthcare information. And the classes in the RIM are ranged across the world of information, not across people, but across people information. And people information is in the form of documents. And so it sort of makes sense to say that people are people with documents, because people means people information. And that's the sort of thing that you find in documents. For instance, invoices. But if you look at the examples, rather than the official pronouncement, the examples, again, we do not find people information. we find people, or processes in reality, like, for instance, supply of bedding. Not supply of bedding request, but supply of bedding. And these are examples which are given directly in association with definitions, which are about information. So the examples provided do not match the definitions provided. So, and this means that the examples support the second half, the reference ontology conception of the rim, according to which the rim is not about information. Rather, it's about patients, devices, patients, devices, paper documents, medication, and so on. So we have two conceptions, information model, reference ontology. Now, it's a good general constraint on a theory of meaning that each linguistic expression E means E. Oxford means Oxford. Table means table. If you depart from this, you're going to create strange things. But that's exactly what the rim does. So the information model conception of the rim is formulated by departing from that simple rule. So the term medication in the rim doesn't mean medication, it means record of medication in information system. That's what it means. Stopping a medication doesn't mean stopping a medication, it means change of state in the record of a substance administration act from active to aborted. So you get used to it after a time. It's strange, but it's sort of coherent. But there are still problems. So we have the following definition of benefit coverage. Benefit coverage is a description of the benefits provided by an individual's benefit plan. This, I think, is dangerously close to a definition of the form benefit coverage equals description of benefit coverage. And again, this is okay if there is no distinction between an activity and its documentation. But it means that you have a definition of the form, an A is the B of an A. And those definitions, again, have all the problems of circularity and vicious regress that we referred to before. Now, there's another problem. The central class of the rim, the very foundation of the whole thing, is the act class. And it's defined as follows. An act is an action of interest that has happened, can happen, is happening, is intended to happen, or is requested, demanded to happen. Note that this is in the terms of the reference ontology conception of the rim. So this, we're talking now not about information, act information, but we're talking about acts, actions of interest, has happened, can happen, and so on. But now in the very same document, we have another definition of act. Three chapters removed, according to which an act is not an action of interest, but an act is the record of an action of interest. Or, in this case, it's worded slightly differently, but it comes to the same thing. Now, these are logically contradictory. Not both of them can be a correct definition of one and the same term. And you'll notice that this one is in the, where this one is in the spirit of the information model conception, this one is in the spirit of the reference ontology. Sorry, the other way around. This is in the spirit of the information model conception, this is in the spirit of the reference ontology conception. Now let's consider then what happens. We have the definition an act is the record of an act, but then we have various examples of acts immediately following, which take us back to the reference ontology conception. Because the examples given are treatment services such as medication, assisting, monitoring, attending, training, and so on. These are not records. These are things that you've done, or could do, or... And this is back to the reference ontology conception. So there's a kind of flip-flop between the conceptions as you move through the text. Now, the another central class in the RIM is the entity class, which consists of things like persons, places, organizations, material. Some people sometimes say that what makes an entity in the RIM is that it has molecules as parts. Acts don't have molecules as parts. Relations of participation and so on don't have molecules as parts. But everything which is an entity within the RIM has molecules as parts. But this isn't right. Because if we look at the states that entities can stand in, they have nothing to do with molecules. The states are being active, being inactive, being normal, being nullified, and so on. In other words, they're states pertaining to data in information systems. The state of being active is the state representing the fact that the entity is currently active. The state of being nullified is the state representing the termination of an entity instance that was created in error. And again, we're back again with the information model conception. Now, persons are entities. And then the question is, what does active and inactive mean as applied to person? Is there a special kind of death through nullification for those instances of person who were created in error? And we notice that the definitions of active and inactive don't help us, because active just is defined in such a way that you already need to understand what it means if you're going to understand the definition. So, well, the answer is the person is not a person, because a person can't be nullified. Person doesn't refer to persons, it refers to objects in information systems which are created through processes of data entry. And so they don't undergo processes like being treated or falling ill or being born or dying, but rather they undergo precisely information processes of being revised or reactivated or nullified. And we're back then to the information model conception. But there is in the RIM something called entity name, which is defined as a non-unique textual identifier or moniker for the entity. And then the examples given are proper names, nicknames, legal names of persons, places, or things, like Oxford. But now we're back with the reference ontology conception, because Oxford is not the name of an information item within a database. Oxford is the name of a place in the real world. And the same in the HL7 glossary, which actually gives examples of person, including John Smith, RN. John Smith, RN, is not the name of an information item. It's the name of somebody with molecules. And that's back to the reference ontology conception. Yes?
Isn't it a matter of what your question is? If my question is, what is the name of the doctor taking care of his patients, that becomes an information item. Not the reference to an existing.
Yeah. So the name is an information item. But the name here is John Smith, RN. It's not John Smith, RN, 446357, which is what goes into the information system. So this John Smith, RN, looks to me very much like the name of John Smith, RN, not like... That's my point, too. And it's good to be clear about which it is.
But the real world isn't clear. The real world's fuzzy and hard.
We'll come back to that. So I'm finished very nearly. I'm precisely leaving open the opportunity for a real discussion. So, conclusion. Let's look at one more of these strange definitions. Definition of animal. An animal is a subtype of living subject representing any animal of interest to the personnel management domain. Now, I try to understand what this means. And I really can't. But it means something like, an animal is not an animal, but it represents an animal. That is to say, an animal is in the information system, but it represents an animal out there in reality. But it doesn't represent just any old animal. It represents only those animals which are of interest to the personnel management domain, or something. Now what this means is that an animal is not an animal. Even if we leave aside the information system question, we still have this strange issue about what kind of entities are those entities of interest to the personnel management domain. Now, the conclusion, this is the final slide. I think that the only solution is truly to be clear about the difference between information and reality. And that means that we should divide the rim down the middle. We should take out with there's good stuff on the information model side and good stuff on the reference ontology side. The problem is that they're squeezed together into a single document. You should pull them apart. You should have a good information model which would use terms like name of a person or a record of an observation. And then you would have a reference ontology which would include terms like person or observation or medication. And then everything will be hunky-dory. Thank you very much.